Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Monday edition of The Drive. Dan, I said it on Friday. I said, welcome into the Monday Drive. I mean, it had been so long Friday, and Don and I were on Friday, and it's like it just felt like a Monday. I mean, you know, but because, of course, New Year sort of felt like a Sunday, so it felt like it. But it is actually Monday, and we are here back
shaking
for the 2026.
You were shaking the rust off on Friday.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? Like that's what was going on. But it's good to be back for the most part.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And obviously on Friday, the portal was officially opening.
Yes.
And
yes, it was.
Like 3,500-something players that and counting have entered the portal. Some have now exited the portal. Auburn has had a couple of players. Well, they had one who had said he was going to enter the portal that
Sam
decided
yep.
to stay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And others who had not announced decisions have decided to stay, and Auburn has added some. So we've got a lot to talk about today. Obviously, SEC basketball got started Saturday.
It feels like the big domino people have been waiting on, Byron Brown.
Oh, yes.
don't have a decision yet, but folks feel like, you know, that could be something that, you know, he went into the portal under do not contact. Auburn is his only known scheduled official visit. You know, a lot of folks have thought.
And he's been on campus. Is he still here? He was here earlier today.
I don't know
midday he was still on campus. He came in town over the weekend and was still on campus as of midday.
Supergroup's got to be following him around like the paparazzi, right? I mean, just waiting to catch a glimpse of, you know, it's like Elvis is in town or something. But with Byron Brown, I mean, from the moment Alex Golish was hired, right, there was talk that you maybe could continue that connection with a quarterback who was as productive as just about anyone in mid-major college football.
Led the nation in total offense.
Led the nation in total offense. Did not win his conference's Offensive Player of the Year or Player of the Year award because the North Texas quarterback had such a crazy year. He's going to He's going to Oklahoma State.
Right.
He's announced a destination. But no, Byron Brown has been. I think you don't hire a coach because of a quarterback. I think there was a lot more to Alex Golish than just Byron Brown. But the thought that a guy who's started 32 games for Alex Golish could continue his career for one more year and come as part of the package, mm-hmm. I think made Alex Golish more attractive to a potential SEC program. And yeah, I mean, I think that if you can get that domino to fall, it's you have the potential to kickstart that 2026 rebuild in a significant way.
Yeah, he is now the number 10 transfer portal prospect on 3/Rivals. So he is going to be highly coveted, although it may only need to make one stop. We'll see. I mean, we could have
a lot of these guys
at
do.
Any time.
Yep,
you know?
A lot of these guys do. Now we've seen a situation with Sam Levitt from Arizona State, who entered the portal with a do not contact, and he's already made multiple visits.
True. Yep.
I mean, that just means you don't contact me. I'm deciding I don't want to be bothered by schools that I'm not interested in.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily mean that it's a done deal somewhere, but boy, Auburn fans are sure hoping that they can add Byron Brown to the, I guess, 7 USF transfers that they already have here in the first couple of days of the portal being open.
Yeah, 8 total, 7 from USF. The latest was Jeremiah Koger.
And that is a big one because he was one of the primary targets for Byron Brown.
He was their number 2 receiver last year. He's a big kid. I think he's 6'2", 6'3".
Mm-hmm.
Got some weight to him, so big physical kid. I think he had 7 or so touchdowns last year. You would project him to be a starter.
And even before you get into the other USF transfers that have come along, we've thought, like, one of the reasons it was easy to connect Byron Brown to Auburn from the moment that Auburn hired Alex Golish, and certainly from the moment that things got serious about Brown entering the portal, is if you've only got 1 year left of college football and you want to make the most of it, if you're Byron Brown, if you don't go to Auburn, you're learning a new system, you're playing for a new head coach, mm-hmm. you're going to have, for the most part, entirely new surroundings as far as position coach, receivers, like you're going to have so much new in that 1 year you've got left. It's felt very easy to connect Byron Brown to Auburn because the alternative is the same offense, the same quarterback coach. Now, a lot of the same targets that you could throw to that you guys have developed chemistry with over the course of your college football career. So I think it's things certainly seem to be trending, and we'll see, because Doug was asking me earlier today on the Max Roundtable about the idea that it's maybe too USF heavy. The recruiting haul so far.
Well, it would make sense though that these would be the guys that it's the easiest decision for them to make.
Yeah, I would. That's one where I'm going to want more information as far as what the roster looks like when they're finished recruiting.
Right. I mean,
everyone.
If this winds up where 30 South Florida players are added, and because Auburn's got plenty of spots. I believe they still have better than 40 spots available right now.
And if the message isn't really resonating with anyone who wasn't a South Florida player, mm-hmm. right? And if they can't recruit guys who have SEC and ACC and Big Ten experience to come in and compete for these jobs too, like that's something that it would give me maybe a little bit of pause going into next season. But I think the fact
I would say, look at the James Madison players, former James Madison players who are playing a very big role with Indiana right now.
Certainly. And I think you're also hearing that Auburn's getting official visits from guys who are who are former SEC or Big 12 players. I'll tell you, there are, including, I think players who could compete for starting jobs on offense immediately, right? Because it feels like, Brian, there are some, even with the USF additions, it feels like you're talking about having a lot of competition between now and the start of the season for a whole bunch of these jobs on the Auburn offense.
Well, you have to find five stars on the offensive line unless you're going to start one of the redshirt freshmen. We'll see, maybe. And I guess Kyle Ellis would certainly be a starter.
That was big that he returned. Yeah.
You've got to replace your wide receivers. You got to replace your quarterback. They're looking for
corners,
at least help at. Well, I'm talking about offense.
Oh yeah,
at tight end, at running back,
and then the tight end room has to
be rebuilt.
I like the young tight end.
So if you look at starters on offense, you're probably replacing 10. If Kyle Ellis is a starter, is there any other starters right now on the team?
That's sort of a wishy-washy.
Maybe one of
Jeremiah Cobb would be.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Jeremiah Cobb. So nine. You're looking for nine starters, basically.
Yeah.
And maybe a Ty Buster or Jacoby Ward as a starter on the offensive line. We'll see. But that's a total rebuild on that side of the ball. A little bit different on defense, except for the defensive line. Certainly needs help in cornerback.
Oh yeah, no question. I sat down yesterday, and unfortunately, I haven't transferred it from the computer that I was on, and to.
You didn't work up my
depth chart with a lot. There are a lot of blanks.
Haven't put it in the cloud yet. You can.
There are a lot of blanks in there. Auburn, I believe now with Jeremiah Koger coming on board, I believe Auburn is now at 63 scholarship players. So that tells you, the NCAA is now allowing up to 105. So Auburn has tons of room.
And how many of those guys were in the two deep? How many of them were starters? Not many.
Yeah. Like Brian was saying, offensively, defensively, guys who were starters, Xavier Atkins, and then your safeties.
And I think
you may have a team that only has six returning starters out of the 22 offensive and defensive and special teams. You may only have six guys who were starters back for those, say, 25 positions when I include kicker, punter, and snapper.
And really, you look at safety, and you're expecting Fagans and Winters to push for starting jobs. They weren't the starters last year.
No, you're right.
So you don't know what's going to happen. And we're still not 100% sure what's going to happen with Sylvester Smith and Nickel. He has not said for sure he's coming back yet. So,
How significant in your eyes are being able for this staff and to be able to retain guys who, you would assume – in the case of Winners, Fagans, Woodby, and the defensive linemen. Like guys who were, these are all freshmen from last year.
Yeah.
The fact that the staff was able to hold on to those players, does that give you some confidence about about their ability to pitch, identify and retain?
A little bit, yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm mixed in with the fact that they've lost 9 of the 12 from the 24 class, the top guys, and you know they lost Deuce Knight from that the 25 class. That's a big loss too. So. I mean, it balances out some there, I guess. But, yes, it was important to keep some of those young players because you don't know if an Autry or
Jordan Crawford
are ready to step up and maybe be starters, at the very least, be big parts of the rotation.
Yeah, that's why, as I said, I was doing the depth chart, and I sort of left blanks ahead of those guys. Yeah. Not that they couldn't be starters, but there are a lot. I'll tell you what the shocking thing when I looked at it. And how much eligibility is Jeremiah Coker got?
He's got 1 or 2 years.
Okay,
I think.
He will be one of the veterans on this team.
Yeah,
Auburn only had when I did it and looked at it, I had Auburn with like 8 or 9 seniors and 7 or 8 juniors, and the rest of the roster is all sophomores, redshirt freshmen, or true freshmen.
Yep.
It is the youngest team I have ever seen at Auburn, and. I understand you'd love to get as many players with multiple years of eligibility as possible.
Oh, I'm sorry. Coker was a freshman last year, so
okay.
He's got 3 years.
All right. So that's maybe 16 of your 63 players who are juniors or seniors. Everybody else is a freshman or a sophomore.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not terrible, but it's also a little concerning because experience is so valuable. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Bill, Dan, and Brian here on the Monday Drive, and let's get to the phones.
Let's go to Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I was just calling to find out how many folks we've lost so far.
30.
Yeah, I had 31 maybe, but something like that. It's at least 30.
Yeah, of course, Sam Turner was the one guy that said he was leaving and then has decided to come back. But there are a couple of guys you're not sure about if they're on the team or will be on the team for 2026. We'll just have to wait on them. But right now, it's around 30 leaving and 8 coming in at the moment for the transfer portal.
Yeah, Southway, we're a prominent landed spot for that quarterback from South Florida.
Sure hope so, because, I mean, Auburn needs a proven factor there at quarterback.
Yeah, right now.
That's what Byron Brown is.
Yeah, right now they've got the freshman they signed that was committed to USF, and they have the USF quarterback who redshirted for them last year. So they got two young USF guys.
Yeah, you have to imagine there's a backup plan if they don't get Byron Brown, if he were to choose somewhere else.
I think Auburn's going to bring in another quarterback or two, at least to try to bring in to visit.
Yeah, for sure. But you have to imagine Byron Brown is plan A.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
In a pretty significant way.
I believe I've seen the possibility of the Kennesaw State quarterback who played for guys who coached with Alex Golish at Tennessee, who's a young guy who had a pretty good year this year, but he may be someone who would be able to come in and be the number two guy and then be ready to take over.
I'm assuming Duke has left.
Deuce officially did enter the transfer portal earlier this afternoon.
Yeah. Although that does, as folks mentioned, that does not necessarily slam the door on if he's going to return to Auburn or not. It just means that he can be recruited by other schools. And so, I was asked on the Max Roundtable earlier today, Jerry, about sort of the Deuce Knight, what I think the next few weeks or months could be for Deuce, and If he doesn't want to be a backup next season, if that's not an attractive option to him, then I really think he needs to be pretty open-minded about where he's going as far as, somewhere that will – he needs to prioritize getting on the field. And if that means finding an offense in the Sun Belt where you really like the coach and you really like the offense and they need a quarterback right now, then do that for a year. And then if he went – to the right program in that situation and played well, he could write his own ticket in 2027. He could go wherever he wants and be a pretty legitimate starting option. But right now, it's a pretty significant bet on potential, right? If you want to prioritize Deuce mm-hmm. Knight as your starting quarterback, especially if you're an SEC team trying to win in 2026.
Yes, but a lot of quarterback decisions are based on potential. We see it in the NFL every single year with quarterbacks being drafted way higher than they should be, and I think we'll see it in the transfer portal. It's the same exact thing.
It looks like the salaries are surely not stabilizing by any means. It looks like prices are going up.
I could see a situation where like a really good SEC program recruits Deuce with the promise of giving him the starting job, but I wonder if he'll be the only quarterback they recruit with the promise of giving him the starting job.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Glad to hear you.
Good to hear from you, Jerry.
And the thought of backing up Byron Brown for a year and learning this offense and then taking over with multiple years of eligibility left and the NFL draft as an option, potentially depending on how you play in 2027, one would think that's also an attractive option too, but it depends, like so many of these decisions, it depends on what the player wants and what the player sort of wants to prioritize in this, you know, in the next year.
334-321-1390, that's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Love to hear from you here on the Monday Drive.
4321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from auburnsports.com here in the studio on this Monday. And we talked a little bit, had a call. I mean, Jerry, you know, wondering how many players have entered the portal. We mentioned the number. Brian, let's go ahead and sort of run down up to this point the additions that Auburn has in the transfer portal.
Yeah, and it's 8 so far. That could change during this show at any time. The first one was Lachlan Hewlett. He was their quarterback at USF. He redshirted last year as a freshman. I think he's from Georgia or somewhere.
Most of these guys are. It's interesting, very interesting that Alex Golish and his staff had gone into Georgia and brought quite a few players into USF, but most of the USF players, at least of the first 6 or so, I think 5 of them were from the state of Georgia. Yeah.
And assuming they do get Byron Brown or another, returning starter quarterback type, I think Lachlan and
actually he's from St. Augustine, Florida.
Okay. I think he's probably a guy that's going to continue to be a backup and try to compete and work his way up the depth chart. You know, maybe a guy that can battle for the number 2 spot, this spring and this fall. We'll see how far along he is. They got the long snapper from Miami, Ohio, Hudson Powell. That's an area that Auburn needed to replace a starter, I think.
Yeah, Reed Hughes was the snapper this past year. Auburn, I believe they signed
signed one, right.
Signed so they a got snapper in the assigning class back in December. So they'll have a couple of guys competing for long snapper.
And then the next group of signees are mostly young players from USF that hadn't played a lot so far. Christian Neptune is a wide receiver.
Now, he caught 30-something passes this past year.
Okay. So he did play a little bit.
Yeah, he and Jeremiah Koger –
Koger was the number 2 receiver. Yeah, Neptune was number 3.
Okay. Right.
And then Corey Pettigrew.
Singleton was the number 1 receiver on that team.
Yes,
right?
He is still in the
portal and has not. Yeah. He has not visited,
as far as I know, yet.
Yeah. And then Corey Pettigrew, a young kid. Then tight end Jonathan Echols, also from USF, tight end.
I like that kid. Yeah. This guy was pretty highly touted. That was one of Alex Golish's top signees at South Florida. Here's a guy that was a 4-star edge who converted to tight end, very athletic, played a good bit this past year, and he's got 3 years of eligibility.
Yeah, and if you look at the tight end room now, Auburn signed, was it 1 or 2? The Broughton kid.
I think that was it, because Ryan Gee and Broughton were the only 2.
Right, they got Gee coming back. Howard has moved on. Now they've got the latest guy.
John.
Jonathan Echols.
Echols.
He's still a younger guy. And
but he's
looking,
6'6", 235, 240.
Looking maybe to sign at least one more veteran type guy.
Probably an experienced guy.
So to kind of fill out that room. But they're making some progress there. You can certainly see it. And then running back, Nekai Davenport.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to pronounce his first name, but he ran for 600-plus yards this year as a redshirt freshman.
Yep, so he's a guy you would expect to come in and compete.
And he's a good-sized back.
Yeah, big kid. So you think he would compete with Kyle for that number one spot or be in that rotation there. Definitely experienced running back. Mm-hmm. That's what they're looking for.
Yeah, because Darrell Robinson had just gone into the portal after it had opened, so Auburn's got the same number of running backs they ended the season with right now.
Haven't heard much about any school and Singleton when you sort of browse social media and try to find reports there. So maybe he's maybe he's waiting until I guess there's the possibility that South Florida could be making a pretty strong push for him. With
they've got a guy who's known for having a little success with receivers as their head coach right now.
Right. So we'll see. You're right. Hasn't been as much steam with his name lately, not just at Auburn, but anywhere, for the guy who was the number one receiver for South Florida. And there have been other receivers around college football that have been linked to Auburn. One that I find really interesting is, because I'm an 850 guy, Bill. We've talked about it before on the show. Kansas State's number one, Jace Brown, is in the portal. And it's interesting that he's picked a lot of schools that represent he's trying to get closer to home maybe. You're looking, it's like it's Ole Miss, it's Georgia, it's LSU, it's Auburn as places that he's reportedly looking to visit.
Well, I was talking about the guys from Georgia. Well, Christian Neptune's from Cantonment.
That's right.
He played at Tate.
We mentioned that
the 850s.
Golish had done a good job. He'd had some guys recruiting that Florida Panhandle area, and he keeps mentioning the 250 mile radius, right? And that includes, you can get pretty deep into the Gulf of Mexico, recruiting 250 miles, straight down.
I don't know what kind of Aquaman you're gonna find you're out there.
You find a tiger shark or something out there. But it's it's cool to see. He's willing to trust his guys this much, and I want to see what how he supplements the roster, beyond these South Florida transfers, to see what sort of what sort of identity the offense can take. And a big part of that's Byron Brown, but a big part of that's also who's he going to be throwing it to? Who's he going to be handing it to?
Who's going to be blocking for them? I mean, Auburn has brought in quite a few offensive linemen. They haven't added one yet, but there's no question this has been a focus. And we saw that from the signing period when Auburn signed a half dozen offensive linemen.
Yeah, added a couple late from USF, and then got Bear McWhorter, a former Michigan signee, who got a release and then signed with Auburn. So you can tell that's going to be an emphasis so far, but certainly, they're going to have to find four or five starting
guys.
Vets
somewhere.
Yep.
And there was one other, I believe, only defensive transfer thus far, another
Gavin
South
Jenkins,
Florida guy.
Another young guy, has several years of eligibility left, and will be able to compete there at the cornerback position.
Which is an area where Auburn definitely needs it now. I mean, I think Auburn only had maybe four scholarship guys that could even compete at corner.
Yeah, well, it depends on who you count as a corner, but
right now
it's Pleasant Woodby and Devin Williams, who's coming off of knee injury.
Well, and see, I was thinking maybe one of the
Champ
incoming
Anthony, maybe
one of the incoming freshmen might get a look at corner, but that's it.
You'd think that Jeremiah Cobb, and I guess, I don't know what's official with Jeremiah, but I mean, if you retain him and he's on board for next season, that's a pretty significant piece that you're holding on to. I mean, that's a guy who fits the description that a lot of the outgoing players, you can describe them the same way, where it's they've played well on teams that did not win a lot of games at Auburn, and one would think if they're ready for a fresh start, there could be teams expected to contend for championships next year that would be interested in players like Jeremiah Cobb. And if Auburn can hold on to him and convince him to stick it out and be part of this offense, Alex Golish sounds pretty committed to running the football, right? And he had a quarterback who had 1,000-plus yards last year, and you don't want to just do it at the quarterback position, even if it's a player like Byron Brown. But no, if you can, I mean, on top of adding with the number two rusher from or the number two running back from South Florida in the Kai, right? Like, I mean, if you have, which I do think that's, I think that you guys had it right.
That's what it appears to be.
Sure, but it's I think being able to keep Jeremiah Cobb in the fold would be, and for that matter, I mean, do we have we heard about Omar Mabson? Like, no. That's another, I mean, another, you know, a local guy who reclassified and was maybe a little bit ahead of schedule last year when he was thrust into the number two role. Like, there's the potential to hang on to, you know, a decent nucleus in the running back room, right? I mean, you would think Jeremiah Cobb in the portal would profile as a starter practically anywhere.
Yeah,
after the season he just had, like, you know, that's a guy that if you can convince, and a lot of the guys we describe that way aren't at Auburn anymore.
Yes.
Right? Like if you that's Cam Coleman. Mm-hmm. That's probably both of the cornerbacks. Right, like that's, I mean, that, like those are guys. That's Robert Woodyard.
That's Malik Blockton.
Right, so I mean, a lot of the guys you said that about on last year's team. I mean, on top of like, well, Keldrick and Connor Liu are in the
right,
and Singleton, who's only here a year, but like those guys are going to the NFL draft. But like the
Malcolm's another one.
Malcolm Simmons, sure. So I mean, it's like, you know, if you can hang on to Jeremiah Cobb, and like that's, I mean, you kept Xavier Atkins. But he's also a guy who was in his first year last year. Mm-hmm. Cobb would be a guy who's sticking it out through like thick and thin,
yes,
at Auburn.
Thin.
And
he thin, stuck it out through thin.
Thin and thinner.
Oh, but it gets thicker. Yeah, no question. Oh, man. All right, we're just underway. We've got an hour and a half to go. Love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about? I mean, if you didn't get a chance to join us, and as we now know the Final Four for the playoffs, we've got the NFL playoff situation. Man, there's been some wild football being played here over the last week or so.
That poor Ravens kicker.
Oh, goodness
man,
gracious.
That poor Ravens
was
kicker.
Was it 42?
Oh, man.
Yeah, but that, I mean, basketball, there is so much to talk about. Love for you to join in as we continue with the Monday Drive.
It's the ultimate Napoleon Dynamite fan experience.
Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, and Auburn basketball dropping an overtime decision after an unbelievable finish to get to overtime against Georgia.
Incredible.
You really felt when Kevin Overton hit that shot.
Oh, yeah.
And there was no question that the ball left his hand. I mean, there was still a couple of tenths of a second.
How do you foul up four? Why are you playing?
I think if you're Mike White, you're wondering, how did you call that? Because it wasn't much of a foul, but you should be
social distancing that shooter.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, it should be six feet away from him.
Didn't you feel like once Overton made that shot, Auburn was going to win the game?
I did.
Yeah.
I just felt like
they've got this one now.
You know what changed?
And then they're up three with under 3 minutes to go.
Wilkinson gets hurt. He's limping around on one foot.
Makes
two logo threes.
Monster threes.
Yeah, just out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's no defense against that, really.
It looked like he reached down and he – remember the pumps from the 90s where you had to pump your sneaker?
Yeah.
It looked like he reached down and he pumped his
Reebok.
He pumped up his sneaker a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And then he went absolutely crazy.
It was wild.
He had an unbelievable game.
And stopped missing, yeah.
But, I mean, look. We heard Stephen Pearl earlier today, Brian. But I mean, some of the numbers, and he didn't want to get into them. He probably would have made him physically sick to talk about some of the numbers. I mean,
he said 127 mistakes on defense.
127 defensive mistakes. Yeah. Now, obviously, you're going, wait, there weren't that many possessions. He's talking multiple mistakes on a possession.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some things like, I mean, some of the numbers.
I wonder how many possessions didn't have a defensive mistake.
Yeah,
probably not many. Yeah.
Probably not many. But, I mean, a couple of the numbers that you can look up, like you couldn't look that one up. But you could look up and see that Auburn was 50% around the basket and Georgia was 23 of 26.
Auburn offensively missed
so many shots at the rim, and Georgia got so many shots and made almost every single one of them at the rim.
Yeah, rim protection constantly this year has made you realize how special the last few seasons were for Auburn, because you don't have anything really approximating that this year. And Georgia scoring, what was it, 23 of 25?
Yeah, 23 of 25, 24 of 26, something like that.
Auburn missed, I think.
Auburn missed 13 or 14.
I think Auburn missed 20 twos in the game, and I don't know how many.
Most of them were right around the basket.
I don't know how many Auburn missed that weren't in the paint. Like, I think every single, like, they might not have all been layups, but I think all, like, Auburn missed 19 or 20 shots in the paint in that basketball game.
I'm saying, most of them, though, were within a foot of the rim.
Yeah, but Auburn wasn't really taking, like, you know what I mean? Like, short corner jumpers or anything.
Mid-range jumpers.
I don't know how many. I mean, I think Auburn.
Tahad hit a couple of those.
That's what I mean. I think the ones that Auburn took, and maybe this is part of the answer, is that when you're undersized compared to most of the conference, even in this era of threes and dunks only, maybe you need to be a little bit more comfortable shooting from the elbow in the short corner with some of your guys, because you have players who can hit that shot, including Tahad, including Keyshawn Hall, and some. But you still need to be able to finish around the rim, though.
Right.
And that discrepancy is gigantic between Georgia being able to, when they got it into the paint, it almost felt like the possession was already over. Right, like when one of the guards was able to get it there, or they were able to dump it off inside, or like, and as opposed to Auburn, where felt like the possession was just starting
Auburn did a great job of getting second shots. Yeah. I mean, they missed some right around the rim and would get second shots. Didn't necessarily hit that second shot, but, I mean, they would get them. So they did a good job of offensive rebounding. But what was it Steven said today, Brian? He said he was talking about there needs to be more collisioning at the rim. And it's like, well, you feel like everybody's going to foul out if there's much more collisioning at the rim. But I know what he means is it felt like a lot of when Georgia was at the rim, there wasn't anybody else. I mean, they'd go up and there wouldn't be another hand up there as the Georgia player was either laying it in or dunking it.
He wants to see more defensive resistance.
Yes.
At the rim. He doesn't want more collisioning often.
No.
That's what he's.
So Auburn has added a ninth edition.
Whoa. It's not the one you're waiting on. No.
But it is a USF, former USF player, Fred Gaskin III, is a defensive back.
He's another
back
DB,
safety.
Right? Yeah.
Maybe he could play some nickel.
And he's got played a pretty good bit for him, I believe, this past year.
Started for him, 53 tackles, two pass breakups, two interceptions, a sack, a forced fumble. So he's a guy that likes to play near the line of scrimmage, along with being a safety or defensive back. So that'll be a good addition, a guy you would expect to be a starter and or a guy that's definitely in the rotation or pushing for playing time. Maybe not at safety. That's why I'm wondering if maybe they're looking at him
maybe
as possibly
nickel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was wondering about that too. So so that is 8 of 9 from South Florida, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. That percentage eventually needs to
yeah,
drop a little bit.
And it will eventually, yeah.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Love to hear from you. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise, basketball, any surprises from around the league over the weekend?
I think Florida losing to Missouri is probably like
that was definitely a surprise.
The biggest shocker, and they're still. I think for all the talk about Florida's front court being able to stick around, keeping those bullies that Florida's got down low, those guys that look like Brian, they look like bullies from an 80s movie,
yes, they do.
Right? The Kondo and Hawk, but Walter Clayton was such a huge part of Florida's attack last year, and they're still. As good as Boogie Fland is, and the kid from Princeton can play, they're still figuring things out, and they can lose to a team that
yeah they're 9-5 like Auburn, right?
and they played some good teams in the non-conference. Arizona was one of those losses, but it's still that's Florida Georgia's the midweek game, which I find
that's a pretty good one.
I think that's a really
Georgia is better. They are definitely better.
Yeah, I think that's a real challenge. Look, that's going to be a real challenge for Florida's backcourt, isn't it?
I agree.
Those Georgia guards playing at the pace they they have, and we were just talking about it during the break. I mean, depth is such a luxury this year in the SEC. If you feel good about being able to go to your bench and bring out a guard that can score or a big that can really produce. Georgia got good minutes from the big fella from App State. Abson can come off the bench and give them quality minutes. And having players like that, it was one of Auburn's secret weapons last year, knowing that they had quality pieces coming off the bench that they could lean on. And this year's team, I mean, it's you'd love to say ramp up the intensity and ratchet up the pace. That's tough to do when you're talking about only five or six, or seven pieces in the rotation. I mean, seven pieces in the rotation, including Magwood, who played a little bit at the beginning.
Yeah, and not much at all after that.
Even though it seemed like on offense there were a couple of quality Magwood possessions, right? I mean, I thought he was getting the bigs involved. He was, it's still, I think Steven will tell you, it's defense when you're asking, like, where's Simon? Where's Magwood? Where's Bashir, right? Like, I mean, I think the defense is the primary reason why you're not seeing more of those guys.
Yeah, that's and defense continues to be the problem for Auburn. So,
but you have to get so creative when Tahad or Overton gets into foul trouble, right? Unless you're willing to
yeah, play those, I mean,
guys,
you had Tahad and Phillip foul out the other night, and that made it virtually. I mean, that made it really, really tough for Auburn, even though they had that 3-point lead there in overtime.
Yeah, you basically had Kevin Overton out there trying to play point guard, and I think talking to Sebastian Williams Adams, that's not a group of five they've really worked with a lot in practice.
Yeah, he says, as a matter of fact, they hadn't at all.
so that was a tough way to sort of play overtime for Auburn, even though they had a good chance to win if it wasn't for those two threes by Wilkinson.
And I think you'd love to be able to get more time on the bench it depends on what you're trying to do, but the thought that, like, you'd love to be able to go to the bench and spell Tahad and Overton more often than you can right now, but because I think right now plan is, I mean, you're back to some of those Bruce teams that really leaned on the starting guards, because it feels like the plan right now is you need at least 32 and maybe 35 minutes from Tahad.
Magwood played 8 minutes.
And what was probably four or five of them at the very beginning of the
no
game.
No points, most 0 of early. 2. Had a couple of assists, though, and no turnovers. So that continues to be a really positive part of his game so far, as far as being able to generate offense for other players and not turn the ball over.
Yeah, it just feels like pace could really be a weapon for Auburn, but it's hard to ask that of two guards that are going to play practically the entire game.
Yeah, and they're going to play the paciest team, I think, in the SEC, Buckyball.
What a change.
Tuesday night.
What a change for Texas A&M. That's one of the things Sebastian said after being recruited for 4 years by Texas A&M. What a difference it is to see this Texas A&M from the style they played.
Maybe the three fastest teams in the league are the first three opponents for Auburn, because Arkansas is right there in pace two on Saturday. Yeah. So you need to be ready to run. It's
a good thing this one's at home. Yeah. I mean, because on short turnaround, you'd much rather have this one at home than to be on the road.
But
it's been a
tough run for Auburn. They played some of the biggest and most physical teams in the non-conference. Now they're starting out conference play with these really, really fast teams that have a lot more depth than
Auburn.
Yeah,
but you better
take
advantage when you've got a chance at home. Look, Auburn's got three of the next four at home, and then they really hit the tough part of the schedule. I mean, they've got to try to take advantage here at home if they want to stay in the SEC picture as far as the race for the title.
And my concern isn't so much long-term fatigue, but I do feel like with Simon and Cade Magwood, like, you probably need to steal them some minutes right over the course, like over the course of a game and over the course of a half. You got to find ways to get them in there just to give Tahad and Overton a break, and also get them a little bit more experience playing that kind of defense, and they can both hit shots. So I mean, I think that's going to be something. It's real tough to ask this of a 6 or 7 man rotation, and especially this week, because of the pace those two teams want to play at. And on top of the way that sort of, you know,
they will get a little bit of a break by playing tomorrow night and then having until Saturday 5 o'clock or whatever against Arkansas. They'll have a little time to try to, you know, get their legs back.
But both of those teams are going to try to get your starters in foul trouble too. Like, both of those teams are going to be, because if they're comfortable having that many possessions in a game, then they're totally fine challenging anyone in your, because when you're talking about five, you know, when you're talking about a 6 or 7 man rotation, you pull one or two of those out with foul trouble, and you can do real damage. And so that's something else you got to, you know, defending without fouling and finding a way to keeping, you know, to keep your most important players out of foul trouble, really important task this week for Steven and the gang.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Monday Drive.
This is Lee County Revenue Commissioner Olene Price. When we have the opportunity.
ESPN 1067 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Haven't talked to Dan since
Oh, really? Really? You know what?
Before Christmas.
Missed you guys last week, one of my favorite trips in the conference, because, I mean, there are some, and I don't mind cold weather, but there are some great towns in the deeps. You know, there are some towns in the Sun Belt that get cold. Like, there are some towns up north.
Yeah, sun doesn't mean it's always warm.
No, you run into Norfolk or Huntington, West Virginia. Or Harrisonburg, up where JMU is. Like, there's Boone, North Carolina. Some places
that definitely gets chilly there.
Famously get very cold in the Sun Belt. So I don't mind taking the trip in early January to Lafayette and Hattiesburg. You know, you get some. It was 72.
It's Lafayette.
Lafayette. Yeah.
Lafayette.
Yeah, Lafayette. I didn't. Not Lafayette.
No, not Lafayette.
Not Lafayette. Yeah. Not Lafayette.
Depends on what state you're in.
Lafayette.
That's right.
And I got to enjoy some etouffee, right? Oh, got to do okay. Hattiesburg's a cool town too. They got a chain. So there's a burger chain that you'll see around the Southeast called Mugshots. It's taken hold. So the original one is in Hattiesburg. You've probably been somewhere recently where you saw Mugshots. Maybe Mobile. Or down in South Alabama, but it's like a burger sports bar sort of deal, and
it's been around for a while.
There was one there was one in Hattiesburg right by our hotel, so I did okay in both towns. Got to watch Troy win in the Cajun Dome and lost to South. Look, Southern Miss has a good team, 98-95. Right, I mean, so there was some offense on Saturday, just a shootout . And Southern Miss made enough shots there at the end, but still feels like a pretty wide open year in the Sun Belt. And Troy's got Arkansas State, who won the tournament last year. They're coming to town on Saturday. Texas State.
So you got two home games this week.
Texas State Wednesday. Troy hadn't played a home game in like a month.
Yeah.
So good to be back. Texas State Wednesday and Ark State, the conference champion from the conference tournament champion, coming to town on Saturday.
Yeah, so, basketball, conference basketball is underway. Brian, I guess, hadn't heard any more talk. I guess there was no loophole that Auburn could find to be able to bring in another player. I almost forgot about that until Dan was mentioning during the break about, folks moving and things like that.
They could have used another big for sure. Probably could have used a point guard, to be honest with you, let Ty play off a little bit. But, no, I have not heard of any guys that Auburn is pursuing, actively at the moment.
Classes get started, I believe, Wednesday.
You'd love a true
city is Tuesday and university is Wednesday, I believe.
So I mean, it's to get in school, and this is going to pertain to the transfer portal as well. You know, basically, you need to be in classes the first 10 days of class.
Right.
Classes start Wednesday.
So that'd be a couple of weeks. That would be around the 20th, 21st or so would be about last. time you'd feel comfortable trying to get somebody.
Talking about classes and stuff makes me think of back in the day when I was in school, you had to wait in these long lines to get classes or to drop an ad and do all these things.
How quaint all these things are, you know, back in my day.
I used to have to get punch cards.
Look, maybe they had somebody in mind, and I know it's a great big world out there. The thought of going and getting someone that can contribute as a five immediately in the SEC, like, that's not playing college basketball right now, that you can go get and bring in. Like, think about the progress that
Oklahoma got the Russian kid.
But think about the progress Jovic has had to make over the last few seasons, you know, over the last few months, and how big that is. I just think, like, that would be, I mean, I don't know. I keep advocating for Auburn to kick the tires on Brendan Frazier, getting a few minutes as a big. He was a very good high school player, and he's 6'7", 6'8", with some muscle on him. So, I mean, I don't know if you're looking for if it gets desperate, you know, you gotta get on campus with some size.
It's been about 15 years now, but remember there were a couple football players that played for was it Cliff?
Yeah, Clifton Robinson and who was
the big guy?
The big guy.
He was an offensive lineman. Yeah.
He was only 6'5", but he was 300.
I remember Julius Peppers at UNC, right? Playing both sports.
We got to step aside. Our top of the hour break. Back with hour number two. Come on in and join us.
What's up, Auburn fans? This is Jack Cutten. Hey, join Carson Meyer and me this weekend for After the Game on Wings 94.3 as we recap the Auburn men's basketball game.
Presented by...
The following is an Auburn Network production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Hope everybody doing well and had a nice weekend. We were here on Friday, but if you didn't realize that or you weren't back in town, welcome back. Students are apparently back in town. I noticed the traffic more pronounced today.
Class is not firing off until Wednesday. But we will. We've got students back in town, I think for the most part this weekend, and they're trickling back in. Our pals at Sky Bar opening up tonight on a rare Monday night opening, so you can tell that folks are looking to get ready for the start of the spring semester here in Auburn.
Yep, and
I think there could be some celebrating depending on what happens after tomorrow night with a game at late night game.
Well, 8 o'clock. It's not as late as one we've had or one that's coming up. I mean, now these 9 o'clock games, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, when Freddie Mercury and Queen was in town, right? You know, that was
I was there for that. You were there.
I was in the house. Yeah, 9 p.m.
We've got another 9 o'clock midweek game coming up.
I mean, we'll see if they do senior night.
It's a tough home schedule for Auburn.
It is.
This year. It really is.
I feel like some real late ones. Yep.
I believe LSU, the last game of the season, the last home game of the season, is LSU, and it's a midweek 9 p.m. tip.
That's the one I was thinking.
They may not
Tuesday night 9 o'clock game.
We'll see if they do senior night, you know, then or you know, do it, you know, find some other way to, you know, if they do it the early.
Then you ought to find a better time to do senior night.
The last Saturday or something, maybe.
That's not a bad idea.
You know, there will be some. That's ESPN's desire to sometimes stack, you know, game after game after game, and of course they got to get, you know, video simulator golf in there as well, right? They got to fit that in. You know, sometimes these games don't start on time because the video game golf goes to overtime. I think that they've got it's you're right. It's not a late night compared to Auburn Queens from a couple of weeks ago.
No, but it's still 8 o'clock start tomorrow night, and a big ball game for Auburn after that opening loss against Georgia. Auburn wants to get back on track. And you really want to at least, you know, hold serve and win your home games. You surely don't. You lose a home game, You've got to make that up somewhere on the road. Yeah. You've got to win a game or two on the road.
Big game for Auburn. Very big. They need to get back in it. They need to gain some confidence. You feel like this team has been tested. You know, they played these tough non-conference games. They started out on the road against a ranked SEC opponent and went to overtime. So this team should be mentally and physically tested and ready to step up and get a big win at home. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, so, one game in here. I mean, you had some really interesting ball games. No. Vandy looks pretty good. Arkansas looks really good. They held off Tennessee well in Fayetteville.
I thought Alabama Kentucky would be more competitive than
Alabama
it was.
Alabama looks better than I think a lot of people were giving them credit.
No, Alabama looks good enough to beat anyone in the league. Now will they be consistent enough to win when they should? We'll see.
Right.
But they look pretty dangerous.
Well, they're always a team that, man, when they shoot it, they can beat anybody.
And you know what? Maybe it's a sign of the times too, but there appears to be very little patience with Mark Pope right now among the Kentucky fan base. This is a former Kentucky player, national champion as a player for that team, was winning at BYU before he got the job. And this is not working. Like this, you know, I think they're gonna struggle to keep teams. Like, look, Alabama can do that to a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. I just wonder what kind of defense Kentucky's going to play.
I mean,
game in and game out.
Alabama got a double-digit lead and just sort of,
didn't get close.
Kept it there.
Didn't feel like that game. Yeah, got close at all. So we'll see what Kentucky's got, because I think that's a program that, especially in a wide open league like this, I think folks thought year two Mark Pope you could make a push to be near the top. And right now, I would not say Kentucky is near the top. Of the SEC.
No, I mean Kentucky. It's interesting. Kentucky, Auburn, and Florida all are 9-5.
Yeah. And look, Auburn's got some weaknesses that could be exposed by the very best teams. I think we're going to learn more about Georgia over the next few weeks and whether or not they're one of the best teams in the conference. But I think it's it is, at least in the case of Auburn, you're talking about you had to replace everything from a team that went to the Final Four last year. And you are in year one of a new head coach sort of finding his way as well. So, I mean, there are reasons to think that I don't know if Steven's under as much pressure this year as some other coaches in the SEC. Mark Pope comes to mind.
You're right.
As someone who needs to, you know, needs things to work out over these next few weeks.
Brian, I would assume that whatever Tahad did to be in the doghouse has changed. We talked a little. We talked an hour number one.
Did you guys consider it was strategic at all, or were you pretty
sure?
Not when
Steven said he didn't.
No.
When it first happened.
Yes.
Were you
thinking? Because I know even at like the ESPN halftime show talked about how it was evidence that Auburn was still looking for an identity and things like that. And I was like, I guess you could talk yourself into thinking.
It's hard to if you've been watching this team and feel like, all right, well, so who's your real point?
And you also, if you think about the way that Tahad and Magwood were used against Queens, right? Like it would be an odd way to sort of. But I was like, okay, well maybe Tahad came off the bench last season and you'd like to get Magwood going. Like there's that belief that's like that you could crane your neck,
but
right?
The rest of the game went, as you said earlier, I mean, Magwood's minutes pretty much came early.
Yep.
And then that was it.
Steven made it pretty clear.
Even when Tahad fouled out.
And then like you guys said, after the game Steven made it pretty clear that it was not a strategic basketball move.
No. So That can happen. I mean, those kinds of things can happen, especially when everything isn't just going along smoothly.
It was New Year's, right? Yeah.
I guess so. Anyway, we'd love your thoughts as we're just about to go into game two here of the SEC basketball schedule. Of course, football right now is the story. I mean, I guess the. The news right now is that Auburn hadn't added anybody in the last 30 minutes.
That's right. They did add Fred Gaskin here about, 15, 20 minutes ago, the safety out of USF. Wondered if maybe he could be a nickel just because he's about 5'8", but real thick and a pretty athletic kid, ran track in high school. and as a guy that likes to play near the line of scrimmage and hit people and be physical. So maybe that's a role he could fill, but really good pickup. I think he was one of South Florida's better defensive players overall.
You know, and I've had a couple of people saying, you know, what's up with all this? I mean, it's understandable when players really are, you know, behind the coach and want to go along and follow the coach.
Right.
But I really can't understand a huge amount of concern when you want to be pulling offensive players from a team that put up the kind of offensive numbers right. that South Florida did this past year. I mean, six of the nine are offensive players
yes.
that all were at South Florida last year. Now, they weren't all prominent players, but I would think that if Coach Golish and his staff want these guys with the production that they've had offensively the last couple of years, that I'd feel pretty good about them coming in and joining the Auburn roster.
Yeah, I think it's worth keeping an eye on, right? Because if Auburn can't start, you know, landing some guys from the Big 12 or the SEC or the ACC or some highly recruited, you know, G5 players in the portal, then you start to get worried. But you know, we're not to that point yet, right? We're just getting started with this journey. They've had a bunch of those dudes come through on visits mm-hmm. or have set up visits. So, you know, you're kind of expecting that dam to break here soon. It just hasn't.
And keep in mind, too, like, I mean, when Diego Pavia made the jump from New Mexico State to Vanderbilt, he didn't come alone.
Oh, no.
Brought Eli Stowers with him.
Brought his running back with him.
I mean, it was several guys who ended up mattering a great deal for Vanderbilt during that turnaround. And so, yeah, I would think that if you're – especially when you're talking about, like, look, overloading on pieces defensively from the Group of Five level, I could understand why that could maybe cause some skepticism once you're going to start facing SEC teams.
But
potentially,
these are skill guys. So thus far,
and I would say in the case of skill guys, like if you're talking about guys who have chemistry with Byron Brown,
mm-hmm.
suddenly like that makes it all the more attractive to keep that going because you're trying to get these moves. Depending on what happens at quarterback, some of these moves could be made with the idea that you need to get the absolute most out of Byron Brown. And if that means bringing in guys that he's comfortable throwing to and
brought in his number two and three receivers now. Both signed right. with Auburn.
And
his top running back.
And there has not been
one of them.
And we don't know what's going on with his number one. Right, I mean, there's been radio silence with Singleton, you know, from South Florida. So yeah, I think that's also, if you believe that's how you get the best out of Byron Brown is by loading up on, and you're still going to have other options too. So there's going to be competition. It's not as though these guys win the job by default, but if that's how you maximize what Byron Brown can do as your quarterback, assuming you get him. Seems to make a lot of sense.
Yeah, thus far, I don't know that I was talking about my depth chart. I don't know that I've plugged in a lot of the transfers at the top of the depth chart yet.
Yeah.
They're there as competitors.
And by the way, how about holding on to Bryce Kane, which is an interesting move. And that's a guy, you know, I was talking to Ferg and Nathan a little bit this weekend. It's like they would both agree, like consistently a guy that you would watch during the viewing window. And think, boy, he seems ready to make an impact, and it just didn't translate on the field.
Well,
he
was hurt. He was banged up a little bit.
He was banged up, and he plays Singleton's position,
yeah.
which makes it a little bit tougher too. But
hey, Brian, you mentioned him earlier, but I was very pleased to see Sam Turner.
I was about to bring him up.
Sure,
you talk about a guy that when we watched, really jumped out at you. I mean, he made some.
Really
big
did.
Time plays.
Like from day one, I've seen him out there at practice. I guess it was going back to last spring. I think mm-hmm. he was an early enrollee until he
physical and
got hurt.
Caught everything yep. near him.
Yeah, natural ball catcher.
Yes.
Just looked terrific out there. And you could just see his size and the way he could run and the control he had that you felt like he was going to be a very good receiver in the future and was a guy that you know was a really good evaluation by the previous staff.
Have we heard about the Smith brothers? I don't know if there's been an announcement.
I don't
publicly
know that there's
about...
been an announcement. I think the feeling is they're sticking around.
No news is good news, you know, and that's
I mean, you don't have to say you know, if you're not making a change, you don't have to make an announcement.
Right. And I would think Duke is another guy where
in previous
years, and not to discount Eric Smith too.
Eric's a big guy.
Yeah, they're share a lot of the same DNA. You know, there's a lot of the same building blocks there. But I think with Duke Smith, like, that's a guy that I would watch in practice and think, in previous years, when you didn't have as much talent at receiver as you maybe did on the 2025 Auburn team, like, this is a freshman you'd get on the field early and get really excited about. He didn't get to play much or at all in 25, but that's a guy I would really like to look. You know, that's someone who maybe a fresh start and a lot of competition at receiver would be a good thing for Duke Smith if he wants to stick around. Those are like relatively local.
Fellas
too. So yeah, I would say there are some younger, untested blue chippers, right? Between Bryce Kane and Sam Turner and the Smith brothers. Like, you've got young potential that you haven't even that you've barely seen.
Hey, I was saying it a while ago.
Potentially,
I mean,
in that room.
The youth on this roster, and there's some talent, and they're bringing in a lot more guys. A lot of the transfers thus far have multiple years of eligibility.
They do.
It's going to be a pretty young team, and they obviously want to go out and bring in some experienced guys. I would say especially up front. You got to have them on the offensive line, and it surely wouldn't hurt if you got a few more vets on the defensive front as well.
Yeah, yeah. They have done a good job of filling out this depth chart, I feel like, and there's going to be a lot of competition. You can already see it in the wide receiver room with the guys Auburn's bringing back, the young guys, and then the young guys they're bringing in here. And they brought in a couple of veterans. They're going to bring in one or two more veterans, I think, at wide receiver. But, you know, you can see the offensive line group, for example, that there's a lot of young talent there that are going to compete, right? But they still need the starters. They still need the veteran guys. Same at the defensive line. Auburn's got some young guys coming back. Malik Autry, Jared Smith.
Jordan Crawford.
Jordan Crawford.
Your receiver.
J.J. Falk. And then probably the best guy in that class. Who was that kid?
Darian Smith?
Yeah. No.
That's another defensive
lineman. Malik Autry?
No, I'm talking about the class they just signed. From just up the road.
Oh, Tootle?
No.
Jaquez Wilkes.
Okay,
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So
big
yes.
athlete.
Tootle's the linebacker folks are excited about in that room.
Yeah, Tootle is definitely a middle linebacker all the way, right?
I think a receiver, it feels like it's kind of like building a pitching staff, right? Where if you can bring in a true number one and slide everybody down a little bit, it changes things up a little bit. And we've heard Auburn linked to, I mean, not just some guys outside of the South Florida pipeline that could project as number one receivers.
Yeah, you mentioned Jace Brown a little while ago. Jace Brown would be a nice addition.
And he's visiting a couple of SEC schools and reportedly visiting Auburn at some point as well. You've also got Singleton from South Florida. You know, you're waiting to see what he does as a transfer. But I mean, that's the thought that you could add to that room and you know, bolster it even more would be great. As far as offensive line goes, you do wonder if that's a position or a group where eligibility remaining.
I don't think it's as critical there.
I don't either.
I think you need guys that have had college experience.
Right.
You've got four guys coming back who are young, other than Tyler Johnson, who'll be a junior. Mm-hmm. And then you've got five guys coming in. Freshman.
Five or six. I think it's six now.
Okay. You'd be okay loading up on guys with 1 year left that have.
For the rest
to have two years left, but you want to get the best guys you can that you feel like are going to fit the system that you have, so you can go out there and especially, I mean, you're still trying to, as far as we know, get the deal done with Byron Brown. I'm sure Byron would like to know who's going to be up there in front of me.
Yeah, and it does, you know, it feels like when you're talking about guys who become foundational pieces on offensive lines in the SEC, you want to get them on the field as early as possible. You know, if you have someone who projects like that, Cale Ellis would be maybe the guy for Auburn, where it's like, if you can get him on the field I don't know if he played enough to redshirt.
He did. He redshirted.
So he redshirted. Okay, so if you can get him on the field as a redshirt freshman with playing experience, like, that would be fantastic. going full youth movement on the offensive line. Like, it sounds great from here. Probably doesn't sound great to the quarterback
who's going to be trying to run.
Like, you know, waiting for those guys to get ready to play. But yeah, finding some balance between young and old, and knowing that you're not going to have to, because it's got to be frustrating, especially if things don't work out on the offensive line. If you go older on an offensive line and things don't work out, it's like, not only did you not get the results you wanted, but you have to completely reshuffle the deck again next year, right? And load up on a bunch of new guys that may or may not have a ton of playing experience. So yeah, finding a way to strike that balance where you've got an offensive line ready to go, but you also feel like maybe you're building something in the process, and it's not a fresh start every single year on the offensive line. Like, that would be
no. You don't want to do that every year. And I think that's one of the things Alex Gulish talked about at media conferences and with us, is, you know, he wants to have a team where they're developing these guys, where they're bringing them along and not having to, because once you get into that one and done type deal, it's hard to get out of it.
You're on the treadmill,
yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah. I mean, if you have any success with it, I guess if you don't win any at all, and you're fortunate enough to keep your job, maybe then you can start playing some of the younger guys. But I mean, situations sort of like, look, Lane Kiffin did a fabulous job at Ole Miss, but they've gotten into a situation where they're having to bring in guys to take the place of players who've been successful that were only there for a year or two, and it makes it a little tougher to then go back and say, all right, we're going to – we may drop back a little bit and take a lump or two while we play some of the younger guys. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. We'd love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind sports-wise? Oh, it's Monday. We'll have Brian's Monday musings as well, as we continue here with the Monday Drive.
Auburn IT delivers professional IT
at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. We've got another break that's just a few minutes away. Why don't we go ahead? Let's go ahead and get caught up on this week's musings from Brian Matthews.
If I can find them. We've had so many stories today. It's not even on the front page anymore.
Man, I mean, no kidding. Well, I mean, there's been so much crazy news. But let's start. What were the athletics musings today?
Well, I started out talking about the offensive line and how that's been an issue at Auburn for a dozen years now.
Mm-hmm.
I look back at the draft. Auburn's had one offensive lineman draft in the last 7 years. LSU, Georgia, Alabama combined, I think it was 2035 maybe total that period, just to tell you how bad it's been at Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked about that a little bit and how the early signs are that it's going to be a bigger emphasis under Alex Gulish. I think they're going to spend more money on that group. And, you know, I think you'll see in the portal as we get going later this week that they're going to bring in some dudes that are ready to step in and be starters right away.
It feels a little bit, before you get to your next point there, feels like with Hugh Freeze, and again, like, now that we know the results, it's easier to, I think, be critical here, but it felt like there was a belief, even going back to that first year, right? Like, the thought was, if you get enough talent at receiver, it can sort of overwhelm and conceal all those other problems you might have as an offense. Like, if you get good enough at receiver, you can have game breakers, and you can move the ball at will, even if you're marginal at other really important spots. To the point where we've heard last year's team, 4 of your 10 or 12 highest paid players might have been receivers.
And a quarterback.
Yeah, sure.
That couldn't play a lick, no offense.
Right, but I mean, and keep in mind with quarterback, you spent heavily on Jackson Arnold. Shopped at the top of the market there because he was a former 5-star.
Mm-hmm.
Deuce Knight didn't come here for free.
No, not at all.
So think about all the investment there at quarterback and receiver that maybe could have gone to the offensive line.
Yeah, it was a mistake, I think.
So I think seeing how they prioritize and how they can, you know, what they can do there, I think is going to be a huge part of what Alex Gulish does.
And then I wrote a little bit about Pettifer, just building on what Stephen Pearl said about him afterwards. He needs to do a better job by leading by example.
Mm-hmm.
and those type things, failed to meet team standards, and just, you know, if Auburn's going to reach his potential, he's got to be better. He's got to take that step forward. He just hasn't done that yet. I think he's taking a little step back.
No, it's been a struggle. The lack of consistency has probably been
whether it's his shooting, inability to really get assists, turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, he's not a natural point guard.
He's not.
He doesn't turn the ball over at an alarming rate by any means.
He gets tired late in games.
But he's not a big assist guy.
No, and I wasn't expecting him to be a big assist guy, but he's not. I think he's 22nd, 23rd in the country. 22nd, I mean,
in the SEC. Conference.
In the SEC right now. So you would expect him to be a little bit better than that, right? Maybe top 10, top 15 at least. So those are the main things I wrote about. And then musical journey, and this is one I've done before, but like I said, a reset with On Three. We're going back 47 years. Y'all both get this.
47 years. Wait a minute. 47 to 79?
79,
yep.
79. Ooh, okay. All right. I got it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
No, I listened to Casey's countdown of the top hits of the 70s.
Okay, all right.
This is a soundtrack.
Absolutely. Okay, I got it now. Because it's Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah, film is. Soundtrack is. By the Brothers Gibb.
Yeah, yes. Mostly. Almost all the Brothers Gibb. Even songs by some of the other artists.
Yeah.
If I can't have Yvonne Elliman.
Now, is the touch of Beethoven on?
Fifth of Beethoven is indeed.
Yep. No, that's Fifth of Beethoven. And that's not Bee Gees. That's not the Bee Gees, right? That's the one except.
That's Walter Murphy.
But it was this day in 1979, January 5th, that it hit what was it then, a record 25 million in sales, which made it the highest selling album of the time. It's still in the top 10.
Right. I didn't know where it was.
Can you name
now, but
the
like
top,
I said,
the top
I heard,
one now.
I heard that the countdown the other day, and what I did not realize.
What is now the number one album of all time, best-selling album ever?
Yes.
Is it
Dark Side of the Moon?
Close. It's on the list. Very close.
Is it the Beatles one album?
No.
I know that's like on the way to
the best selling album.
Okay, I'll give you a hint.
Is it Purple Rain?
It was the '80s.
Is it Thriller?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Okay.
And then the other one is also the '80s, but it surprises me because it is a metal type group.
Is it Metallica?
Nope.
Is it Van Halen?
Nope. This one surprised me. I listened to it a lot.
Def Leppard?
When I was young. AC/DC's Back in Black.
Oh, Back in Black. Okay.
Yep. Okay.
Which, of course,
several songs from Back in Black staples on Wings 94.3. I'll tell you what blew my mind was listening to, I was largely ignorant of pre-Saturday Night Fever Bee Gees music.
Oh, there's some really, really good stuff.
Before they went.
Really good. Disco.
Falsetto and disco.
Yeah. Robin found out he could hit those notes an octave higher.
They would play, so Little Steven on his syndicated radio show would play some pre-disco Bee Gees songs where they were doing some like Beatles-esque harmony
very
stuff.
Very much early on.
Yeah. I mean,
I like a lot of the early Bee Gees stuff.
If you don't know, and there's probably people listening don't know what I'm talking about, right?
No,
like they think of the
right.
Bee Gees and they think
Bee Gees disco.
They think of shadow dancing, right? Is when they
Let me tell you something. If you have never seen Saturday Night Fever, that's a movie you need to see. I would recommend watching the TV edit of it because
Some really dark turns.
Tough parts of that movie that really
I remember.
Don't.
I remember seeing it in the theaters.
Yeah, or you know what? Or maybe, because I don't even know. I struggle to argue that the movie has aged well. The soundtrack's fantastic.
No, it has.
Well, the dancing
scenes. You can't relate to that stuff now.
The way they filmed it, the connection to Red Mountain in Birmingham.
Yeah.
That's where the idea for the lighted floor came from. They built a new one up there.
2001
Odyssey,
in
Brooklyn. It's all filmed right there.
You're right. People see the dance sequences and think it's going to be like this lighthearted romp through New York club scene, and there are some very heavy, very dramatic, very dark moments.
What I
rewatched it last
night,
by the way.
And now here, at least this is what Casey said on his countdown, was the Bee Gees' biggest hit. What would you think was the Bee Gees' biggest hit?
It was probably
How Deep Is Your Love?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I mean that would
Staying
not
alive.
Have that
no. Staying Alive would be your,
yeah,
your
you'd
first
really
guess,
think Staying Alive. You know, but no, it was How Deep Is Your Love.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing about this, and I've written it before, but this the Bee Gees did not get involved with the soundtrack in this movie until post production.
Mm-hmm. They wrote half the album
in one
over the weekend.
Yep.
Yeah. I remember that.
Lowdown by Bob Skaggs, I believe.
Boz Skaggs.
Was the music they danced to, or they during the movie, and then they put the the music over that, the Bee Gees movie.
Oh wow!
So
they had to find something with the same sort of tempo.
Yep.
I can see. Wow. I can't imagine Lowdown now. I've got to see Travolta dancing and imagine Lowdown.
or the Lido Shuffle.
Yeah.
Right.
There you go. But you mentioned Dark Side of the Moon. That's fourth all time.
Oh, okay.
The surprise.
I just thought, as far as longevity being on the charts, they you'd sell that.
Surprising me, a Bodyguard, Whitney Houston.
Bodyguard soundtrack.
Soundtrack number three overall. The four and five and six is not surprising at all. A 70s group, maybe the top 70s group of all time. Greatest hit album.
Fleetwood Mac.
70s Eagles.
Eagles, greatest hit, volume one, and then Hotel California.
Yeah.
Shania Twain, Come On Over, 1997 is in the top 10. No surprise to me that Fleetwood Mac Rumors, maybe my favorite album of all time.
Yeah, I was wondering what Fleetwood Mac Rumors.
Top 10 there. And then Meatloaf, Bad Outta Hell is 9. Huh. And then Bee Gees, Saturday Night Fever is 10th.
Meatloaf is maybe the biggest surprise there.
Yes.
Right? Just
because
that's like a string of hits.
Yeah. Sure. But you think about the...
No, he didn't have them, though.
You think about the artist...
There were two
you think
or three, Paradise by Dashboard Lights.
The artist has so much on it, right?
Yeah.
Like, there are enormous artists from the last 50 years of rock music that you didn't name.
Oh, that's true.
Right? Yeah. Titans. And Meatloaf gets in there. And again, not to begrudge Meatloaf, who had some enormous songs. I mean, I think Paradise by the Dashboard Light is sometimes dismissed as a great song because it's a Meatloaf song.
Oh, no. It's
fantastic.
It is.
It's fantastic.
It really is.
Oh, man.
Beatles 1, you mentioned 18th all time.
Let me sleep on it.
Led Zeppelin 4, 11th.
That's a good one. Zeppelin 4 is great. One. Yeah. Going to California is on 4, I believe.
But you got to think back at most of the albums on this list were pre 19 or 2000 whatever.
Oh yeah, back when albums were being bought.
Yeah. I guess one of the newest ones is Adele 21. Mm-hmm. That was 2011.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's in the top 20. It looks like they're not all numbered here.
No, streaming has taken a bite out of these monster
huge bites.
Because as recently as the 90s and the 2000s. You would have, it's a major event that this album is coming out by this artist.
Yes.
And now I think the way
that's
the
also
way you can
one
distribute
reason,
music. Yeah.
Yeah, another reason why concerts are more expensive now. I mean, there's
point.
less
that's
money,
money,
less money
right.
being made on the sale of their music.
Mm-hmm. And you got to pay to see them,
that's
right?
Right.
While you can.
Oh, yes, you do. All right, I guess we'll go ahead and get to our break, even though, I mean, we can keep talking this if you'd like. Love for you to join in the final 20 minutes or so of the Monday Drive.
AU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive, final 20 minutes here on this Monday evening. Bill, Dan, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, and B. Matt, I know a lot of times we just sort of do it at the very end, but I think as much as is going on right now, it would be good to go ahead and just talk about, everything that you guys are covering. I mean, there is news that can be breaking at any minute here with this crazy one-time transfer portal going on.
That's right, and Auburn's trying to get as much business done as soon as possible, right? Because as you mentioned, school starts here, I think, in two more days.
Yeah, I mean, it starts just about everywhere, though, over the next 2 weeks.
So following the transfer portal and everything happening there, most of the outgoings, are done. There could be some guys pop up here or there, but now it's about incoming guys.
Yeah, that's
guys
the thing.
Be adding to the roster.
Right, that's the thing to keep in mind is that it's not necessarily done. You still have 11 more days. And there could be some guys that are feeling pretty good about, they're looking at the depth chart and going, hey, I've got a pretty good shot. But if school goes out and brings in a transfer or two at their position who's more experienced, then they still have the option of being able to get in the portal.
Yeah,
and for guys,
I think Auburn is pursuing another veteran running back. And if that happens, what do those two young backs think about that? I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for guys who are maybe still making their decision, I mean, you would think that, it behooves you financially if you're going to go into the portal to be in there.
Yeah, get in while everybody hasn't filled spots.
Yeah, midnight. You wanted to be in there midnight Friday.
Yeah.
Right? Because now you're showing up and there are already schools that might have been shopping for someone at your position that have made their choice. and went with somebody else. And so I think you like if you're not in now, like I think it would be, you need a pretty good reason.
Well,
because hopefully your school has taken care of you and you are a priority, you know, where you're currently enrolled.
Yeah, I mean, I would guess though, this is one of the things we talk about the players having, you know, they've got the control right now, but it is a situation for some of those guys that aren't assured of being starters.
Mm-hmm.
All right, do you stick where you are because you know that you're taken care of? Because we've seen some guys that might go in the situation I was just talking about here. School brings in another player, and then the current player feels like, well, they don't care as much about me. I'm going to jump in the portal. But if you get in late, like you were saying, there may not be a spot or the kind of landing mm-hmm. spot that you'd be hoping for, and you might end up, you know, having to drop down a level. Or we've seen cases where some guys just don't get opportunities again.
Yep. Yeah, it feels. Yeah, go ahead, Brian.
I was going to say about AuburnSports.com. We are covering the transfer portal as close as you can cover it. We've got multiple guys over there interviewing kids as they leave, giving updates. Really, you know, every minute or so, every 15 minutes, there seems like something new will pop up. And even though Auburn has 9 guys so far, incoming players, the bulk of the most important guys, the starting quarterback, the starting offensive line, the starting tight end, the starting defensive line, the starting cornerbacks are still to come, basically.
How many more do you think? When I look at the roster size now, I think Auburn's going to be looking to add at least 25 more players.
I agree. I think they'll go over 30 incoming, and we'll see if anybody else leaves. But, yes, I agree. And those positions, you've got to sign multiple dudes. I mean, you can't just sign a couple of defensive linemen and cross your fingers and hope the young guys or our freshmen's ready to step up and play. You know, you got to get guys in here ready to play. That edge position is so important for Auburn. Maybe Jarrett Smith can step up and be that guy, but, boy, you better have a veteran to mix in with that group too. So just a lot of very important and also very expensive players that Auburn has to add to this roster in the coming days.
And that's something that, you know, people – it seems like monopoly money. It seems like it's imaginary, but no, it's very real, and that's something they have to be very aware of, and knowing where they're spending their money and not spending. You know, you don't want to overspend here and not have enough to be able to fill out a competitive roster.
That's what you get all these personnel people for, right? They've got to pick the right guys. They've got to value those guys at the right spot, and they've got to go out there and make a deal.
Yeah, they'd love to. I mean, you want to be able to field, like, at the very least, a pretty healthy two deep, and maybe have some projects developing beyond that two deep at a lot of these positions. And so that's where some of these guys, I mean, you've retained several defensive players that project as, you know, parts of a pretty solid two deep at their respective positions.
I think linebacker you feel pretty darn good about.
Well, at linebacker you probably had a really tough decision to make too, right? Because you kept that group together while also losing Woodyard to the portal, and it's like keeping five, you know, would have been your
tough.
Yeah, you're investing.
You
got to
find playing time,
and
right?
you kept four, and you brought in a couple of freshmen.
And the you got to remember, Melendez is going to be a starter, right?
He is
too talented. Juice
is going
to
play.
Riddick is coming back from the injury.
That's
He's a great player.
I mean, you got four really talented returning linebackers.
Riddick was the most highly touted of the group. It's just, you know, an injury set him back in his second season. But, I mean, I think that,
he can be a star, and
Wood's the one guy of the five with 1 year left, right? Mm-hmm. The other guys are, you know, presumably you can
Atkins lean on them. Probably has 1 year left.
Well, no, sure, but you're talking about officially, right? Yeah, like you're, I know, so I think there's, you know, there are some areas of need. But no, I think I think that all told, like you've absorbed the worst of what could have been, and again, you know, to fret too much about, like I understand you want to believe that this was building to something, and you don't want to just hit the reset button again after 3 years of Hugh Freeze, but this is a group that lost 13, 14 of their last 17 SEC games, dating back to the 2023 Iron Bowl. Right, so I mean, so pretty significant change needed to happen, and if that, you know, if that involves some players that you were excited about deciding they don't want to be on board for the rebuild and they're going to try their luck somewhere else, it feels a bit like collateral damage in the face of of what needed to happen.
And hey, look around. Look around at the country. I mean, it's not like Auburn's the only place. I think Auburn's losing more than most schools. But I mean, there are an awful lot of players that I wonder if the word sort of, if there's a little bit of word or something out there, Brian, that, hey, this may not last forever. You better grab what you can while you can. Yeah. Because that's what it looks like right now. Because we have the unrestricted, it's, you know, the sky's the limit kind of free agency right now that I just don't know that can continue, you know, indefinitely.
No, they're going to have to sit down with the players and come out with some sort of negotiated agreement, you know, figure out a way to do that. I think more and more ADs and conference commissioners and people are starting to realize that they cannot continue this. They cannot rely on Congress or whatever. They've got to sit down and come up with an agreement to iron things out better, have some sort of salary cap that'll work, have some more rules regarding transfers that will work both ways.
You can't blame student athletes.
No.
Especially like because unlike the pros, like professional sports, there's no arbitrary number of years that you're allowed to play. Right? Like you play until the market decides you're not good enough to play anymore. In college athletics, you have that 4-year or 5-year window, and so with only 4 or 5 years, you can't blame a kid if the option is available to pursue free agency after every season. Can't blame a student athlete for doing it because you got to make hay while the sun's shining. Mm-hmm. Now, does that mean like if you agree with the statement that unrestricted free agency after every season is bad for college athletics, you probably need to be hoping for collective bargaining. Like,
yes.
If you agree with that statement.
I agree with that statement.
And you probably.
And I agree with your statement.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think.
I'm hoping for some kind of bargaining.
Yeah. Collective bargaining. And unionization and collective bargaining, you know, the student athletes unionizing and then college athletics agreeing to recognize that union and sort of negotiate as a, you know, almost as a professional sport. Like, that would need to be the next step. And the fact that you're seeing people like Jay Billis and sitting athletic directors and head coaches and Bruce Pearl this week talking about collective bargaining as the next hurdle that college athletics needs to find a way to climb. Like, yeah, if you want to see those kind of restrictions, if you want to see players maybe sign, what do you think of this, Brian? A guy coming out of high school signs with a D1 program and he's signing his exclusive rights for 2 or 3 years to that program in exchange for a handsome financial reward, but he's agreeing that the first 2 or 3 years of his D1, now he can drop down to junior college, he can drop down to the FCS, but if he wants to keep playing at the D1 level, he's going to play for that team.
I also think there should be an exception if the head coach leaves.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? I agree.
Beyond that, and then maybe after, look, if you've already put in 3 years and you want to go test free agency after 3 years, sure. And if you've put in 4 years and you have an you're still eligible for a fifth year, maybe test free agency again. It wouldn't drive me too crazy.
Not for guys with 1 or 2 years.
But I think it's the guys that, especially unless
they sign a multi-year deal if they have 2 years left.
But I think I think folks really want to get a handle on, and in college basketball it's even crazier, right? Is the thought of You're a freshman who's going to go hit the market again after your freshman year, and you're a sophomore who's going to go hit the market again after your sophomore year. And it wasn't because there was a coaching change, and it wasn't because you were unhappy. It's just because there's money to be made out there, and it's like that can be frustrating, I think, to a lot of folks.
I think fans get very discouraged when they can't feel like they have any idea of who might be around for another year.
And I don't think there necessarily has to be a rule on transfers. I just think there has to be a rule on enforceable contracts, which you just don't have
right
now. In fact, you can even put buyouts in these contracts. So if you lose a great player like Cam Coleman, you're going to get compensated for you, and that's going to give you a better chance to go out there and sign.
Yeah, now you're not saying compensation from the player. You're talking about from
the school.
From the school where he goes.
Right.
That's that makes perfect sense.
So instead of saying a guy can only transfer twice, or if he's forget all that. Just have enforceable contracts and let everybody work it out, or let the market work it out that way, right? You can have salary caps or agree upon that, you know, collective bargain that. But you know, I think there are some kids that might need to transfer three or four times until they figure it out, right? And there are some that, you know, need to stick it out at a program and work their way up and you know, learn to do it that way. But I just don't think we should put everybody in that one category and say, you have to do it this way.
Before we get to break, Brian, I mean, obviously, that's not all that's going on. I mean, basketball. SEC basketball just getting started, too. So coverage of that as well.
We met with Stephen Pearl. We talked to Sebastian Williams-Adams today. We've already got two stories from that. I'll have a preview in the morning. And then another late-night SEC Network game for Auburn tomorrow night against A&M Buckyball. I think I made the mistake, was it last week or the week before, talking about how Texas A&M always gives Auburn trouble because they got all these big physical guys.
Right.
I'm like, oh, yeah, that's not Texas A&M anymore. As Sebastian reminded us today, because he said he was recruited by them for 3 or 4 years, and this is nothing like the team that he was being recruited
to. Yeah,
he said,
they may be quicker, but we're bigger.
Yeah.
And Auburn's not going to be able to say that about everybody.
Nope, but it'll be interesting. If anybody has wondered what Buckyball is, you're going to see it in full force here at Neville Arena tomorrow night.
All right, we'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind things down here on the Monday Drive.
Hi, this is Tyler with Gutter Pro. Around here.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7.
And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes here on the Monday Drive. All right, so, Brian, you're the big question, Byron Brown.
Yes.
What, I mean, all signs, I feel like my magic eight ball says all signs point to yes.
Yes.
When I flip it over. But I think the Auburn fan base is more than anxiously, you know, waiting and thinking, let's hear something soon.
Watch the scoreboards at Jordan-Hare tonight, and if they launch the white smoke, like you've got yourself a new quarterback.
I would still be confident in that area, but I have no idea when. I'd be surprised if it doesn't happen in the next day or two.
If it doesn't happen in the next day or two,
maybe it's time to start worrying.
It's going to be more than nervous.
It's really if he visits somewhere else.
Yes, absolutely.
That's when you start to get worried, right? So we'll see. I mean, it could happen. Like as soon as we come off the air.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good. Fun stuff, Brian. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything that you
and
the guys
do. Yeah, appreciate
it.
Check us out, auburnsports.com. We're running a great deal right now, 50% off your subscription, which saves you a bunch of money.
Oh, yeah.
And gives you minute-by-minute updates from the portal, basketball, recruiting. I think baseball preseason practice starts in another week or so. So, yeah, check us out.
Fun show today.
Yeah.
You're back tomorrow, too.
I'm here tomorrow, yeah. I'm here every day but Wednesday.
All right. We're both here. Andy Burcham should join us. Jake Crane in hour number two. So looking forward to that. But we're out of time here on the Monday Drive. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.